6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
He's a commander in Gilead. He doesn't give a shit about the resistance. He doesn't want us to win. The only thing he ever cared about is you. And because of that, you're gonna run around like he's some hero? Like he's his fucking savior that you've been pining for ever since you got back? You think I don't see it? What?
I don't know what to do.
Don't be in love with a fucking Nazi. How about that?
Everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Daphne.
And I'm Wendy.
And I'm Jason.
And this is the Handmaid's Tale podcast.
This week, we're covering The Handmaid's Tale, Season 6, Episode 7, Shattered.
Shattered. Are you shattered? I'm not shattered.
No.
I liked it.
No, I thought it was great.
I mean, the title scared me a lot, so I guess I'm not as shattered as I could be.
I'm like, everybody's dying.
Well, I thought they were.
I mean, a lot of people died,
but
they weren't characters that we really know.
We didn't know them, but it was pretty disturbing.
Incredibly disturbing. So let's kick it off with overall thoughts. Wendy, what did you think?
I really like where the story's headed. It feels like everything's coming to a head. I feel like we have some serious action coming to us in the next couple episodes. I'm scared, but I'm loving, I feel like we got honesty from a lot of characters this episode that we hadn't had before. It feels like the veils are being lifted and we're seeing some truths.
And some veils are coming back over some people's heads, it feels like.
Yeah. A little bit.
Serena.
Serena. I'm curious.
I mean, Serena's got handmaids at her wedding.
Yeah.
You know? But no, I mean, I've felt like that this whole season that people are speaking truths that it's taken them a while to be able to talk about.
I think Serena might have just peeked through the veil, but it might have always been there.
What about you, Jason?
I loved it. I think you're right. We're heading for some action. And it feels like that's going to happen right away, like in the next episode, which then makes me wonder, oh, well, what will the two after that be? Will they stretch it out over a couple of episodes, or will it go horrifically bad and then we'll need the next two episodes to clean up the mess? You know, I don't know, but I'm very much excited to find out what happens. But as far as just this episode went, I really liked it in and of itself. I don't know. I just kept my attention all the way through, and I liked what happened. It's kind of like you have your favorites and you have your hopes, and some things that I like and hope for came true, but I know some other people probably weren't as satisfied. If you're a Nick fan, maybe.
You know? I feel like we got a heel turn from Nick where he realizes, I've lost June, so I've got nothing left, so I'm just going to go full commander. And I'm not a fan of that. But I guess we'll see what he's made of in the next couple episodes, probably.
Yeah.
I really like this episode a lot. I've liked this season as a whole. I think that it has really been full of these special character moments. And this episode definitely had that. Anytime that you get Elizabeth Moss on the screen and you get to have June connecting with Commander Lawrence, it, to me, is magic, the two of them together. It's kind of like they're in a battle back and forth, and I like it. I like the chemistry that they have. I think it's one of the things I'm really going to miss when this series ends. The two of them just light up the screen together.
Yeah, it'd be cool if Lawrence makes it into the Testament somehow.
That'd be fantastic. I'm just not sure what's going to happen. We got three episodes left after this, and I can't believe it's almost over.
If you'd told me, like when we watched season one, that this was how it was going to be ending, I would not have liked that. Because as I said early on, I think it kind of takes some power away from this situation. It's meant to be a warning against not letting these kinds of things happen. And so to have the catharsis of rebellion feels like just turning it into some kind of a thriller fan fiction thing. But now that the world is the way it is, I've already said this before on the podcast, but now that the world is the way it is and we need hope and we need examples, then I like it more. I feel like it fits the times better. If I don't know if that makes any sense to you guys.
No, it's, I think it does. I think we need those moments or things to remind us how powerful you can be as a person. Mm-hmm.
To fight and, back. And
yeah, seeing this rebellion fire, this little match of rebellion.
Yeah.
Is exciting and empowering and gives you a lot of hope. So I definitely agree with that.
Like, I saw that Penny said in chat she hadn't started watching yet because she doesn't know if she wants to, given the state of things. And I'm like, nah, I think you should watch. I think you'll like it.
And yeah. I think it's more real life in that I don't think we're going to have a happier ever after ending where the Death Star gets blown up and all is good from there. Although we know even after the multiple Death Stars blew up, everything was not
then
good.
Then we got shitty movies after that. So.
Well, that's a matter of opinion. I think it will be more like real life in that there will be wins and loses.
Yeah.
Yep.
But Wendy, you did get Tuello back in this episode, so I know you were briefly happy about that.
I know, a little bit. Yes. Yes.
So let's go ahead and kick it off with our points. Wendy, what do you have up first for us?
I think the biggest piece of the episode was Luke and June. I feel like they've both been tiptoeing around a lot of different things since June got back to Canada. And I feel like they had honest conversations for the first time about certain topics, especially Nick. But also I feel like the whole time June's been back, she's been, you know, trying to pretend like she's fitting in and that she, you know, is just a regular person, and she's not. And that's not what she wants. And I think it's taken her a little while to figure it out. And now I think Luke's on board and he realizes that that could never be who they were. They were never going to go to Alaska and live happily ever after. That's not what their fate is. And so they were really talking honestly, and I loved hearing the things that Luke said it. And he said it with compassion, but also, like, Luke's feelings count too. And he was talking about his feelings, and he said that basically he knew all this time that June was in love with Nick and how much it hurt him, but that he was obviously trying to do what was best for her and give her space and be understanding. And I think June really needed to hear that, to hear what it had done to him over time. And I feel like their relationship is probably on more solid ground than it's been in.
Yeah.
And I just loved them kind of coming back together. I also feel like they're doing all this before they kill somebody off.
Yeah, he's a dead man. Right? Things are nice. That's the end for Luke. I'm just 100%.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I did like it.
Yeah, me too.
As Luke has had a bigger and bigger role in this series, I love the acting. I love his character. Team Luke all the way.
Yay.
Well, especially after last week, right?
I've always been Team Luke.
I can separate the two things. Like, I think it's possible to like Nick and to like Luke and to like Nick with June and to like Luke with June. I think it's possible to have those things. But for me, it's Luke all the way. Like, I think he's such a good man. And a good father and a good husband. And he wants so desperately to do what's right for everybody.
I like that what we've seen from Luke in this episode and in prior episodes is that he isn't as afraid to speak up and let her know what he's thinking. Whereas I felt like before he was almost on eggshells at times, not wanting to upset her because she'd been through so much. And now...
Yeah. Well, he finally reached the boiling point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it needed to happen. But again, June's also had conversations like this with Moira this season. Things that needed to happen where it's not always obvious to her what is going on with other people in her life. Like, they're stepping up to do things and she doesn't realize that other people are hurting too. And you don't have to compare pain. It's okay for everybody to be going through their own things and have painful things happening. You don't have to decide who's got more pain and who should be more upset. Let's instead look at, okay, let's do this together. Like, let's work through our pain together, not try to compare it and make it a contest.
Yeah, because Luke's been through his own pain.
He has. And that's come out this season, and I appreciate that, mm-hmm. him talking about feeling helpless. I think that it's valid, and it needed to happen, and June needed to know it. And like you, Wendy, I feel like in this episode they came together and put together those pieces to rebuild in their relationship.
Through this whole episode, I was looking for signs about whether their relationship was going to end, because it just felt like, you know, we've said, I think Daphne, you might have said, maybe she doesn't need to be with either one of them. And I thought, yeah, that sounds like it could be a possibility. And now, you know, sometimes when you break off one relationship, it makes you see the rest of your life clearly, you know? And so when June... But, and also June telling Serena she's subjugating herself to a man, you know, a powerful man, it made me think that maybe it was headed that way with June too. She's like, I should not be with any man right now. So after she left Nick in, you know, that dramatic parting and went to Mayday headquarters and Luke hugged her, she seemed not quite receptive at first. And then he says he knows what happened at Jezebel's, but not who tipped off the commanders. And she says Nick told them. And he's like, how did he know? Like, he knows damn well how he found out. And I thought I could trust him. And, you know, honestly, I kind of think in some small way, what happened to these women is a little bit on June's shoulders, because she didn't have to tell Nick this. And Luke is pissed because he also thinks that he's a commander in Gilead. He doesn't want us to win. The only thing he ever cared about is you. I think there's a lot of truth to that. I'm not sure if Nick didn't want them to win. I think at best he didn't care much either way, as long as he came out of it okay, you know. And Luke, that's when Luke said, I know you've been pining for her ever since you got back. And yeah, me too. I was just so glad he finally expressed some anger about that. And she's, I don't know what to do. Don't be in love with a fucking Nazi. How about that? And I'm like, well, you can't help who you're in love with, but you can try to see things clearly. You can choose not to repeatedly cheat on your husband with a guy. And I do consider kissing cheating. And then when later June apologized to him and he goes, yeah, well, you've gone through so much. That's his knee-jerk habit. It's okay. You've gone through a lot. I'm just going to be really understanding and absorb all of this. And she's, for the first time, saying, no, I don't want you to stay with me because you feel sorry for me. What do you want? I want you to be happy, and I want you to be with someone that deserves you. And I thought, oh, she's breaking up with him. She's like, but what really she was trying to do was do right by him, let him go unless he's there for the right reasons. Not out of pity.
She was giving him his get out clause.
Yeah. And she doesn't want him unless he loves her. She didn't even want him necessarily if it was just because of Hannah. She wants it to be for love. And I think that's really admirable. And I'm glad June did that. But it took Nick doing something horrible to get her to that place. But at least she's there now. And so now that she is there, and Luke's saying, I should want to leave you, but I can't. And, you know, I was very relieved that they both wanted each other still. But also, I feel protective of Luke. I'm like, if she goes back and messes around with Nick again, Luke, I have no sympathy for you if you stay with her after that. You know, this should, and I don't think that's going to happen. My prediction is they'll be fine until he dies in the finale, maybe. I don't know, maybe.
They're going to live forever, of course. Come on.
Yeah, I'm calling them Luke and June 2.0 now, because I feel like this is the first opportunity where things can actually really start over for them, because Nick seems to be completely out of the picture. And Luke was incredibly lenient and understanding about June and Nick's relationship for so long, because he kept chalking it up to this bond they have through this shared trauma in Gilead. And now I think they truly have a chance. We'll see what happens in the next couple episodes, but I feel like this is the opportunity for them to really start over.
Yeah, yeah. I was actually surprised. I thought one of them was going to break it off, but they didn't.
No. They're, at least for now, they're still together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that is what June wants.
Yeah.
And what Luke wants. I think they do want each other.
What's the poetic way to say it? Your heart is split in two, you know? She loved two men, and now she, I'm sure, still has a place of love for Nick, but she's like, I can't forgive what you just did. So then it becomes clear, okay, Luke's the right one.
Okay, Jason, what's your first point?
Nick.
Good old Nick, favorite character on the whole show.
So we pick up right where we left off in June, staring at Nick in the closet. And that was intercut with the results of what he did. All these women at Jezebel's getting massacred. And I kind of wondered if that was going through June's head. That was kind of the idea that she suspected that was probably happening as she's living with what she just heard. Nick says he didn't think Wharton would do that. Do you guys trust that? I don't see how he could not suspect it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Wharton definitely wanted Jezebel's to be gone, period. I get that. Yeah. I don't think he would have thought twice, because I still think there's something about Wharton that we haven't seen yet. We haven't seen his diabolical side that I feel is there.
But I mean, just Nick should know, and I think Nick does know, that any commander is capable of anything like that.
Absolutely. And he's like the head commander of everything.
Yeah. And I was also trying to figure out, because we didn't really think about this too deeply yet what did Nick tell Wharton when Wharton cornered him there? And he's like, you tell me the truth, because you know, you're going to be on the wall if you don't tell me the truth, basically. And would Nick, I'm sure Nick didn't say, oh, well, I was getting some messages for my girlfriend.
No, he probably said, this information came to me that there's this plot afoot. But he probably didn't give up June.
Yeah. And so, okay, you found out from a little bird that there's right. going to be an attack on Jezebel. So why were you there again?
He was, you know, scoping it out.
Yeah, and it's like, okay,
seeing what's
Nick
going on.
Already there. Had to make up a story, but he couldn't make up better one than that. You know, than giving away. That's what gets me. Like, he already had right. the lie to Wharton, but he couldn't make up a better story. And anyway, so then she makes Nick take her back to near Maydays, gets out of the car. Nick follows after her. June, you know, you never cared for what I did unless it helped you. I'm like, yeah, good move. Criticize her. That should help. You just got a bunch of innocent women slaughtered. So pointing out what you think are June's flaws is a great move. And then he's like, I killed those two guards to protect you. You pretend like I'm not a commander or an eye when it suits you. And I'm like, yeah, you're right about that. She needs to stop forgetting that. And then she says, you gave up those women to save yourself. We all want to save ourselves. We're fucking human. That's what we do. She's like, you're just like them. And you love me. So what does that make you? And I just heard her mother's voice in my head. A Nazi lover.
Well, and to be fair, I do think it was a lot for anyone to expect Nick to sacrifice his life.
Yeah.
You know, he was saving himself and probably a little bit June. So I do think those are unrealistic expectations, but she shouldn't have had those expectations because he's a commander with a wife who's having a child yeah. on the way. And why can't she just see that his loyalties are
yeah. I
askew?
Mean, people keep calling him a Nazi, and he kind of is, because he's in this, he's a part of this regime, and whether he's fully playing the part with gusto because he believes in it, or he's just trying to go along, get along, to go along, or whatever it is, go along to get along, that's what a lot of Nazis did. I was just following orders, you know? And yeah. so that's just what Nick does. And yes, he has, as Maura said later, he helped you. He saved your life. You wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for him. So that's Nick's saving grace. He loves June, and he would do anything for her, including risk his life. And if I think if potentially if telling Wharton would have meant June's life was at risk, maybe Nick would have sacrificed himself for right. that, you know, but it wasn't June. It was people he didn't know or care about.
Right. He doesn't care about their cause.
No, he doesn't care about the cause. He just cares about himself and who he's in love with. And what else was I going to say? Oh, I do think they're setting it up so that Nick, because, well, then there was the whole thing with Rita, which I won't go into too much detail, but she, you know, don't you want to be a man who does the right thing? Nick, I don't get to have what I want. I'm like, oh, poor you. But it's really shitty because Rita came there thinking she and her sister could go back to Canada. Now they're both stuck in Gilead. But I think they're setting it up so that Nick will maybe sacrifice himself to redeem himself. I suspect that's where it's going. I don't think they're going to leave it here with Nick just being a total, you know.
I don't know.
I think it's either going to go that way or he's really going to be the bad guy.
Yeah.
Because the way he was talking to Rita was so callous.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah. And there's still that thing we've always been wondering about, that what part he played in the.
Yeah. What did he do?
Of Gilead.
Did he deliver the bombs? Did he take the bombs in? Like, did he? I don't know.
It was all his
idea. Something really big, I think.
A couple other quick things. So Moira points out that Nick never gave June any reason not to trust her. You know, she's trying to make her feel better. And she said, if I had a commander at Jezebel's, I could fall in love with him too. That was trying to help me. I could fall in love with him too. I mean it. I'm serious. If he was like hot enough, I'm like, well, Wendy keeps telling me you're gay, but it doesn't sound like it. Just kidding.
I think you mentioned that.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
I mean, she then, did talk about the levels of hotness of Angelina Jolie. Rihanna was another one.
That's true.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that was a great little scene.
Yeah.
Then Lawrence, I love Lawrence saying, I always thought you were an idiot for trusting him. Well, you trusted him too. You put him in charge. I was always selective in what I told him, and I sure as hell never let his smoldering gaze obscure my better judgment.
Yep.
Yeah. That's so funny.
Oh, gosh.
I wish I'd written that.
Only, what, 2 minutes of Bradley Whitford and Elizabeth Moss on the screen, and I wanted more. I really did.
It really leaves me wondering, like, does Lawrence have any allies in Gilead?
No, I don't think so. I don't know.
Because we sort of think him and Nick were allies, but that's been a rocky road.
Some level. Yeah.
They were allied out of convenience.
I don't think he does. Because, I mean, we're going to talk about him, but he's, like, ready for June. Like, can you please kill all those commanders like you said you would? You know, before, all the way up till now, he's been more reluctant. He'll help if you really give, you know, push him. But now he's the one doing the pushing. So I think he's up against the wall, so to speak.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's all I had on Nick.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
All right. Well, I am going to talk about Janine, the Jezebel's Massacre, and where we're at, because it's horrifying, let's just say. Incredibly horrifying. Basically, the Guardians come in and hoard all of the women from Jezebel's into the shower area, and a last-minute call comes through to save Janine, and the rest are completely gunned down right in front of her. So you can imagine the trauma of that, because she cared about those women. They were her girls.
Yeah.
She wanted them to get out. It was something she really was focused on. It was something she wanted to be a part of, is helping them escape. And for them to be murdered in front of her while she was helpless had to have been incredibly traumatic. And yeah. I wondered if Commander Bell was going to be involved in saving her, because I didn't think Lydia had enough pull to be able to do that. So I wasn't sure. For a minute, I was actually scared that Janine was going to die in that massacre.
I thought she was going to.
And when she was saved at the last second, I was happy about it. But then I also wondered who saved her. And we find out that it's Commander Bell, who has pulled her on his own accord into his home to be his handmaid.
And he pulled her into a horror movie.
Basically, yes. I mean, at least at Jezebel's, she had moments to get away from him. Now she's going to be in there 24/7. And of course, this ties into Lydia, because Lydia visits Jezebel's and sees all the blood, and then picks up that picture that Charlotte had drawn that Lawrence had given to Janine. And you can tell that she's devastated. She thinks Janine is dead. And then she finds out that Commander Bell is having a new handmaid, which she seems completely surprised about, because they're, quote, newlyweds. But she seems completely relieved when she finds out that it's Janine, because I'm not sure how much Lydia knows about Commander Bell and Janine's relationship. Probably none of it.
And she knows a little now.
No, she does now. I mean, she saw the big bruise on Janine's face. She has to know.
And just like how much I see people in the feedback getting frustrated with Lydia's storyline, because like how much do you need before you see the light?
Yeah. Lydia finds out that Janine is going to be at the Bells, so she gets the robes ready to take to her. Now, Lydia knows that Janine does not want to be a handmaid. Lydia knows that Janine wants nothing to do with that life. And yet she's happy, and I think part of it is just she's just relieved she's alive.
Yeah.
But getting there and seeing it and then not being allowed to see Janine and then seeing her in the window just for a second before the wife rips her away. The wife rips her away from the window. That was his wife.
Are you sure it was the wife? I thought it was Belle.
It was the wife in a green dress that pulled her away from the window.
So they're both just giving her it.
Fuck.
Honestly, I think the wife is one of the people that was at Serena's bridal shower. I think she was the one sitting to her left. I think that was her.
With maybe the dark
hair. Yeah. And that's another point to talk about.
I missed that. I thought it was Belle both times.
No. Green dress ripped her away from the window. But Janine's got a big bruise on her face.
Yeah.
And Belle even said she's not going to be able to go to the wedding because she's not ready for public view. And that they've been working on her adjustment all morning.
I hope she kills him. If nothing else happens.
That's what Jean said. I bet you it will.
I feel like she might be the one, or it could be June. Because June knows where Janine is now and the situation and has seen Belle. And I'm just ready for June face on that. Because
my guess is that June will somehow facilitate it, but Janine will be the one to do it.
That'd be fantastic. I'm down for that.
Yeah, seriously.
Let's do it. He's just all levels of evil and has to go. So watching Lydia react to all of this, like go through the gamut of emotions and realizing that her joy at Janine being alive may not be as wonderful as what she's thinking because Janine's now in her own private hell that she can't escape from even for a minute. Like, she's going to be stuck there. This is where she is now. And Lydia can't do anything to get her out of it. She can't. So this is the situation that she's in. And it's not a good one. I was worried about that being where Janine was going to end up after they saved her from the massacre. And that's exactly where she is. She's in a terrible place.
And everything this season has been about showing Lydia realizing, okay, Gilead is not a good place. And I'm just like, you had Janine's eye removed because she talked back to you. So it's hard to have any sympathy for Lydia being all upset about these horrors happening when she was the perpetrator of just as bad.
And Janine has told her, like when she went to visit Janine at Jezebel's, Janine told her, this is it. What did you think was going to happen? Like, Lydia's getting hit in the face with it over and over again now. And I'm like, when, I'm with the listeners. When is it going to sink in?
Right.
That this is what
come on.
Gilead really is. It's not what you think it is.
The thing is that, and I've probably said this too many times, but Lydia is just framing everything in terms of this extremist religious beliefs that she has. And so with that in mind, she can justify a lot of horrific behavior. And then when there's horrific behavior that goes outside of those bounds, then she can be horrified at it. But I can't feel sorry for her unless she also realizes, oh shit, the stuff that I did was bad too.
Yeah. You know? I had a role to play in this, and I played my role, and it resulted in this. It really was, you know what? It put these women in this situation where they were gunned down, honestly. She trained them as handmaids. They were discarded after giving birth to their babies. They were put in Jezebel's for retirement. Yeah. She had a role to play in it. She played the role. And now,
but she would say, I thought they were going to, you know, be revered in their retirement. And it's like, but the stuff that you put them through was ritual rape for years.
I mean, did she think there was like a shady brick home for retired handmaids somewhere that they were going to be living in?
I mean, even if they did, even if they went to Shady Brook,
no,
it's still despicable.
Exactly.
What Lydia did.
what she put them through. She she has to own up to her part of it. And sometimes people are just not willing to or not ready to until they're ready to.
I have so much judgment for the characters on this show. I think more than any show I've ever podcasted on.
Yeah.
Well, it's like revisiting World War II. Like, you know, it's why couldn't somebody have stopped it? There were so many places along the way that somebody could have stopped it. And that's what we're going through right now. Like, why doesn't somebody stop it?
Like, look around. Look at the fucking extremeness of what is happening right in front of our eyes. Stop excusing it and just hand waving it away. It's just a joke or
dismissing
whatever,
it. You know? Right. Making someone
like,
who
it's
has
serious.
As a person who deals with anxiety and some things will happen and I will like voice that, it is really disheartening to have my own fears dismissed by people as being, oh, that's not going to happen, or that's not real, or you shouldn't be feeling that way. And it's like, but I am.
Meanwhile, our government is disappearing people to a prison in El Salvador.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, that was my point. Wendy, we are back to you. What do you got?
Can I just scream how stupid Serena is constantly over and over again? She's just like you said, Jason. It's like she has learned nothing from her experiences. Nothing. She's back on her pulpit telling the women of Gilead what they should do, what they should think. She seems to just lap all of that up, all of that attention. And you could look at that and say, well, she's trying to make them have a different view of things. But is she really? I just wanted to scream and shake her. I did think it was interesting. Naomi and her seemed to be squaring off with each other, which I thought was interesting. And I was thinking maybe what Lainey had said was right. I don't think Naomi's going to be the hero of the story, but I do think she might have a bigger role in the story. And I'm here for it. I want to see what happens. Mm-hmm. And Serena and Gabriel still continue with this like sickeningly sweet love story, but he gives me the absolute creeps now. And I think something is coming. I think his sweet boy smile hides a lot under there.
Well, he already ordered the massacre of a bunch of women. That's
and
pretty
how
bad.
Could she be so stupid to marry the like? I guess we're saying he's the highest commander.
Yeah, it seems like it.
Yeah.
Lawrence says she's going to be the queen of Gilead.
So basically, he's the president. Basically,
kind
he's
of
in charge.
Yeah.
And she's going to marry him. And what does she think is going to happen? Like, I'm just, it's boggling to me.
Well, she says, the wives were so dismissive today. They mocked my ideas. They think New Bethlehem is a folly. Well, you're the future Mrs. Wharton. They will treat you with respect. I'm like, doesn't Serena bristle at that even a little bit? He just said, pretty much overtly, you don't deserve respect because of anything in and of yourself. It's because you're married to me.
Right.
And,
yeah.
I mean, maybe she's just so used to being treated that way, but she goes right to, seems their husbands don't support my ideas either. So she's just trying to get him to help her. And then when they're talking about planning the wedding and she shows just a little bit of disappointment that handmaids will be there, but that's over in a flash as soon as he says, it will be a show of unity with everyone represented and us on top. And she can barely contain her glee at that because that's so much of what it's about for
her.
And he's there with the love bombing and everything.
She really should. She should at this point, given everything she's
smarter
been through, especially
and better.
Before this.
Like,
you know,
she should be a better person, but she's not.
And if she can't be better, she should at least be smarter. Like,
that's true. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
she's just put herself in the lion's jaws. She put herself there.
Mm-hmm.
And that bridal shower was the bridal shower from hell. Okay?
Yeah.
I can't even. It was so sterile to me. the niceties and the
My husband says this.
And Serena's saying, well, what do you think? And they can't, it's like they have no thoughts.
They're offended, you know what, that she asked.
It took me back to a movie. Oh my gosh. The Stepford Wives.
Oh yeah.
so much so. The way that they were acting. Like, yeah. I was
what got me about it is when she's saying, you know, hey, we have this fertility center, and they're like, well, yeah, but the present system works just fine. And she's like, well, there's no handmaids in New Bethlehem except as attendants. And somebody's like, well, nobody will want those women around. And that kind of behavior where it just gets under my skin, where human beings are so tribal by nature and we like insulate ourselves from other people and then think of them as other. And so they're not worthy of getting to know or of being compassionate about. And at its extreme, that can breed hate and it can lead to a lot of suffering, violence, and death. And that's what's happening here, right? They just see these people as other and dirty and unworthy. And the antidote to that kind of thing is to get to know people who aren't like you. And that's what Serena did with June. And now she feels more compassionate about the handmaids, just a hair, but still. But I mean, she's still off base, basically expecting them to be slaves, but she's better than she was. And that's similar to Wharton ordering these women to be killed. He's in this self-righteousness and views them as unworthy and expendable, you know? And it's just disgusting behavior to
their ants under his shoe. He doesn't think a whip about them.
No, they're an obstacle that needs to be removed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's horrible to think that someone views life that way.
I agree.
Yeah.
All right, Jason, what do you have for us?
A plan takes shape. So
yes.
After everything with Nick and all the women at Jezebel's, June's just kind of over it. I'm just going to go to Alaska. But Lawrence is like, oh, come on, we got to kill the commanders. And she's not interested. And he knows just how to get under her skin. He's like, well, Serena didn't give up. And you ready to watch her in her big wedding gown and broadcast around the world with handmaids all around while you're back at a trailer park in Alaska? And what really got her, I'm surprised he didn't mention Hannah, actually, because it feels like that's missing from this whole equation of June.
Yeah.
Like what? But I agree. That's where they want the story to go. But anyway, she's like, wait, did you say handmaids? And I think the point of that was like, okay, Serena is just right back where she was before. So F her, like I'm going in. And when she really turned on a dime there, suddenly she's like leading the whole thing, strategizing. That was really fun to watch. And it was crazy to see her, Lawrence, and Mark all at Mayday headquarters planning to kill a bunch of commanders at Serena's wedding.
That's the brain trust right there.
Yeah.
That is the brain trust.
And it's such a great climax for the series, this situation they've set up, going into Serena Joy's wedding to cause mayhem. So when they, you know, let's see, they're going in as handmaids and smuggling in weapons. And I just think, our podcast art is such a great representation of that, you know, which Kristen, to give Kristen credit, came up with that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, she did. I think she actually made it herself. So Lawrence sends Lydia away to pitch a fertility clinic, but really it's to get her away. So this new Aunt Phoebe, we've never seen her before, right?
Smuggle Gina Moira in. Only in this episode, I think, at the beginning where she goes in to talk to Lydia about Janine.
Yeah, right. And she, I kind of wonder, because so we didn't know at the time, but she's like a rebel spy or sympathizer or whatever. So, or operative. And maybe this might be a stretch, but maybe she deliberately sent Lydia over to check on Janine because she knows Lydia's wavering and wanted to confront her with it. I don't know. But, anyway, so now she says all the handmaids are on board. And so she's been coordinating all this on the inside. And it sounds like everyone is on board except for Lydia. She's been down in Gilead, but she's not at the point where she would rebel like this. So they have to send her away. And when Phoebe smuggled in Moira and June in the back of the trunk, they weren't in their handmaid's tail garb yet, which seems on a logical level kind of dumb to me. They should probably be wearing it now so they can be inconspicuous. But my guess is because this is such a visual show that they're going to make that a big moment, seeing June back in that dress again, since she's,
we
haven't seen her like that in a while, you know?
Yeah. I feel like it's going to be the March to Rebellion, maybe, is when we're going to see it.
Yeah. And that's what they advertised the season with. It was a picture of June back in the Handmaid's Tale outfit.
Yeah, and I wondered when they did that in the advertising if it was meant to showcase something new or if they took it from something else. I wasn't really sure, but I never remembered seeing her like that. But, you know, it's been...
I thought it meant that, oh, maybe she'll be stuck as a handmaid again. But no, it meant this.
Not June. They would never let her be a handmaid again. No way.
Good point. I should have known. So that sets us up for a really exciting rest of the season.
I love the way Lawrence pushed all her buttons. He knows which ones they
are. He really got what he wanted. Yeah.
He did. And I mean, even telling June where Janine was.
Yeah.
That she is alive and that she's with Commander Bell, which June has met Commander Bell and knows what a despicable asshole he is.
And she's like, yeah, I'm going to save her too.
Yeah. She pulls out all the stops. He knows how to get through to her. Only he could. And again, all I could think is, oh, how I've missed them being on screen together. It was so wonderful to see that.
Yeah, I agree.
Yep.
So I appreciated that. Okay. I don't think I have anything left. We just talked about the plan. Let the revolution begin. Can June please have a plan for Commander Bell? Yes, that would be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I don't have anything else other than notes. So I'll circle back to you. Wendy, do you have another point?
I just wanted to talk about the ending scene with June and Moira. I really love that. I mean, this is another pairing that they've had a really complicated relationship since June's been back to Canada. And I loved seeing them come together. Again, I feel like we're just setting ourselves up for pain, you know, and we don't know where it's coming from. But I really loved seeing them together. You can tell that they're actually really afraid. And they showed that really well. But also, these two have been together and been through so much that they can immediately giggle about things, even while they're afraid. And Moira asks her to say something inspiring. So she says a prayer. But at the end of it, she says, give us the strength to kill those motherfuckers. And Moira says, a fucking men. And it's just so irreverent and powerful. And I really just, at the end of the episode, I was ready. I was like,
yeah. They played some music. I forget what it was. A rock song.
Yeah.
Barracuda. They played Barracuda.
Yep. From Heart. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. Heart, yeah. I thought it was perfect.
Crazy road those two have been down.
It's great.
It's crazy to think that we're at the end. That, you know, the show has been going on for 6 seasons and now we're coming into the final landing and I'm nervous but excited to see how it goes.
Me too.
Yep.
Jason, do you have any other notes?
Nope.
All right. I think, we've covered everything. Next week, we'll have the wedding of the century.
Yeah,
I feel like we should have correspondents on the ground to watch people as they walk in, you know, like this is a red carpet event like the Oscars. But yeah,
I heard there's going to be pyrotechnics.
Oh, yes.
It's going to be a real show.
I'm sure you're right. we are back with some listener feedback. Let's just go in the order of the way that we did our points. So we'll start with Wendy.
All right. Robin Mark says, petition to rename Commander Bell Commander Belland.
I had to look up what that meant. So look it up, everyone.
Please, when I tell you, my jaw dropped at that ending. Ugh. When Nick was giving it, let's go to Paris, I love you, I knew the guilt was guilting. He could have gotten away with lying and saying he was going to step out on his wife, and instead, he chose the nuclear apocalyptic option and went for, hey, so there's this resistance plan? Brother, you are so cooked. If looks could kill, the one June is about to give him would knock him dead instantly. I do think had he said he stepped out on his wife, he would also be dead, though.
Yeah, me too. I don't think that Commander Wharton has any patience for that. And no. Also, one thing we didn't talk about, those moments in this episode where June was having to stand there across from Nick and she couldn't react to what she had just heard.
Yeah.
Must have been so hard for her, because I would have wanted to punch the crap out of him at that point.
I do think Nick is clever enough to have come up with a lie that would at least buy him some time to go to Paris, you know, but he didn't want to do that.
Well, he did buy himself some time to go to Paris, but she's not going to Paris with him.
That's true. Yeah. He was already going to go anyway. So yeah.
He was going
to
leave.
He could have come up with a better lie. He could have said, Lawrence sent me there to look up some information on something, or I don't know, something.
I think. And I wish we had seen that conversation, but I understand why we don't. But I think it's that Wharton knows. I think Wharton knows a lot. And
I don't think so.
And I think Nick, he wouldn't have bought that. He had to give him something real. And I'm not defending Nick at all.
No, but I'm just saying, if Wharton knew what Nick was doing, then Nick would be on the wall already.
I mean, maybe. I mean, I don't think he knows everything, but I think he knows things, yeah. But I think Nick had to give him something real or he wasn't going to get away with it. But just my thoughts.
Tracy Haig says, Nick had no choice. He loves June, but Commander Wharton was threatening him with the wall. And let's be honest, June has betrayed people in the past. She turned on the handmaidens to save Hannah in season 4. But you guys are right. Nick sucks. I just added that last part.
Matt King says, we finally get to see episode 1 in the UK this Saturday night, so we're miles behind. Wow. I realized that they are behind. I had seen a post about when it was actually going to start airing, and
I don't know why that would be. That's a shame, though.
Yeah.
Ben Stone says, arg, Nick, as Groucho Marx said. Those are my principles, and if you don't like them, well, I have others. This character shits me to tears. I like the growth of Janine. She was always portrayed as helpless and stupid. She's great when she's standing up for herself and being articulate. I had a bit of a chuckle regarding Moira. She's back in Gilead, getting a crash course on all the people that have helped June. Wait, that's Nick? Regarding meeting Lawrence, who's that? Can we trust him?
That's true.
Moira must be thinking, damn, that girl has a lot of contacts. Okay, I didn't get my shits going down moment this episode. There was no earth-shattering kaboom, and everybody wasn't blown into smithereens. But yes, I was born a sweet summer child in Australia. The noose is tightening on so many characters. The walls are moving in on our heroes inside the trash compactor, and the Dianoga is circling. Oh, sorry, wrong franchise.
You mentioned the Death Star earlier.
So yep.
Yeah.
That's right in.
It all comes back to Star Wars.
You know what? You know I'm not a Star Wars person, but I actually made a comment when we were recording Run for Your Lives last night, and I brought up Star Wars because something reminded me of Skeleton Crew. I'll never live it down now.
Becky Anderson says, if Janine doesn't survive this season, I will riot. Me too. We're all going to riot. I have a lot I'd like to say about Aunt Lydia, but I won't because it would be spoilers for the Testaments. Just know I have some thoughts. LOL. I'm ready for the rebellion to begin. Sure, Nick messed up the original plan, but I assume Serena's wedding would provide an even better opportunity to take out the High Commanders. People were already thinking about that. Did they hint at that before, or people just guessing?
No,
at it?
People, I think, are guessing. Just guessing.
Yeah, I didn't even think about it. I love Lawrence and Angela scenes. Precious. I'm so anxious to see how everything plays out with so few episodes left. Us too.
Yeah. Alma Contreras says, oof, this was a really full episode. I was on the edge of my seat the entire time. And even though there was not a lot of action, it had much needed character confrontations. Shots were being shot from everyone. I also was just listening to the cast, and I gotta say I agree with Jason on all counts regarding both Nick's and June's character. I mean, when they were making out, all I could think was about Luke. And the fact that when we saw him last, he was probably getting arrested. And I get it, June has love for both guys, but come on, I'm tired of June feeling like her struggles are the be-all, end-all. I just want to shake her and say, girl, you are not the only woman that has suffered and lost. I guess self-centered attitude is what has turned me off on her plight as far back as season 2. I know mine is a very unpopular opinion on June, but I just can't help it. Oh yes, and I think June and Nick are two sides of the same coin. Gosh, there was so much more I wanted to say about this episode, but it escapes me. One last thing about Serena. I do not think she is stupid by any means. Given everything that she went through, she still believes all that stuff she wrote about and lived. Her getting married to a powerful man will only make her powerful on the under because she learned her lesson with Fred. And these are just a few of my cents about this episode.
Alma, you should tell us what you really think.
Yes.
She always does.
Christina Boyd Taylor says, holy crap is all I can say. It was fantastic. I have more to say, but don't want to spoil anything yet, just in case. She posted on our Handmaid,
yeah,
our Mayday group, and so feel free to post in theirs. Yeah.
Yeah, when we put those comment posts up, anyone, don't read those if you haven't seen the episode yet, because that's the point, to just be able to say whatever you want about that episode.
Yeah.
So we want to hear what you have to say, Christina. Tina Marie Groskrick says, wow, I was shocked by the ending. I shouldn't be surprised, but I was. I'm now wondering where everyone is that was you know where. No spoilers for me. Oh, everybody's like on the spoiler thing now. Looking forward to listening to your episode tomorrow. I had to wait until the night to watch the episode. I had to work in the office today. What is she talking about? The ending was Nick and June in the closet, and she's wondering where everyone is. Oh, she's talking about Jezebel as well.
Yeah.
Heather Sklarski says, definitely a surprise ending. I think that's why it was called surprise.
Yep. Deborah Barry Fineros says, surprise, but not a good surprise. I agree.
Nope. Not all surprises are good. Mm-hmm. Lisa Moreno says, okay, I just finished the episode, so everything is still fresh in my mind. I knew that Commander Lawrence and June were going to collaborate to get those commanders out of the way. I think everyone saw that coming. When she called Nick and he basically said to send Moira on and her to wait for him, it was a massive eye roll for me. I knew she was going to end up at Serena's when he told her to go over there if he doesn't come back out. I don't think that June and Serena's relationship will ever be a strong friendship. There's too much trauma and damage for them to really be able to get past it, at least for June. Well, that's an understatement. She's now planning to bomb her wedding or something.
Yeah.
When Nick came over and he was fine, I was so suspicious. And when he said, let's go to Paris, the second big eye roll hit me. Then to hear Commander Wharton say Nick basically revealed the plans, I wanted to kick him.
I think we all did.
Yes. The only positive thing about this reveal is that June is finally going to get to tell him to F off. How is this going to affect Commander Lawrence, though? Great episode. Can't wait to hear you guys talk about it. Thanks, Lisa.
Lynetta Ford says, the ending was, oh my golly wally. Commander Wharton's temper is very interesting. Wondering if it'll make any future appearances. Serena is so delusional. Comparing her suffering to June's is mind-boggling. Now I have a like-dislike relationship with June, but in my opinion, she has Serena beat. Sure, Serena has suffered in different ways, but as a result of her complicity in helping to create Gilead. I'm glad Rita let June know that she wasn't risking it all to help June. I like Commander Lawrence playing chess with Charlotte, even though she's too young. But she enjoys being around him. Aunt Lydia needs to wake up. She and Serena are in the same DeLulu club. It's hard for me to predict what's going to happen, but if everyone dies, I want Hannah to be able to get out of New Bethlehem, which I don't think she's in New Bethlehem right now.
Mm-mm.
No.
She's in Gilead proper.
Yeah. Rinaldi Calixt says, June should have listened to her mother when she said, don't even bother with Nick. Holly made good arguments about that, but June, as usual, is stubborn. Serena is definitely cruel, callous, and complicit in horrific crimes, but she's putting herself at risk to help June for no real benefit. I still think Serena needs to do life in prison, but it would take years with an expert emotional intelligence therapist to train Serena on how to think with emotional intelligence and really realize how horrific the things she has done truly are. There's no way Serena and June are going to be besties, and there's no reason for them to be friends. I realize this whole storyline between these two women is how sometimes you're forced to coexist with those who refuse to take full responsibility. There could be co-workers of mine who, if they watch this show, would go, June needs to cut Serena some slack, and I gotta work alongside them. Season 6 is the only season that Serena Joy character has captured my attention in a positive way. Artistically speaking, again, Serena needs to do life, maybe 15 if she gives the Canadian government a lot of information about Gilead. Nick wasn't a surprise to me because I always viewed him as selfish and focused on June and not the evil things Gilead has done. Lawrence being schooled by Janine and shown you are a better person than these commanders, which means you'll be on the wall. I also like Janine saying, just because you're better than those commanders doesn't make you a good person. I also love Janine challenging Lydia to say, give me my daughter back if you really want to help. No, her name is Charlotte, not Angela. She's my daughter. You stole her from me. You stole my daughter. Janine has had it with the Gilead sugarcoating.
Yeah.
She definitely has.
Mm-hmm. I don't blame her. All right. We have a voicemail from Sam Lowe.
Hi, guys. It's Sam. You guys did such a great job. Oh, you guys have been doing a great job, especially in the last episode discussing this newest character twist with Nick. It's a hard thing. Like, you guys were helping me to process why I was so kind of shocked but not surprised kind of thing, or surprised but not shocked. And I didn't anticipate it. I don't think we have enough information. Because Nick has been an eye. He has been hiding and lying for June since season 1, and his life has been in danger. He still, if he's able to, he wiggles out of it. And I think this season is showing him just sort of decompensating. So, like, he's struggling with killing this kid, even though he's killed many a person before. And then he's, you know, scrambling like, June, let's run away from it all. And it's like, what is happening? What are you running from? Let you've been working for a Nazi regime this whole time? Like, you're, the sins of your past are coming up for you? I don't know. It seems like we're missing something here of, like, he's just spiraling, and I don't see the reason why yet. For me, I don't know. It's so funny. I was listening, like, I mean, for the past couple of, you know, podcast episodes and even last season, I'm like, whoa, Jason, you really hate Nick. Like, I don't know if you do, but that's the impression I get. I'm like, whoa. I mean, he's not a great person, but I was like, whoa. I would have thought someone who was a fan of Serena Joy would kind of get why people liked an unlikable character. Like, Serena Joy helped create a genocide. It's like, yeah, I get it. I mean, for me watching the show, I don't think anyone's a good person. I think maybe Janine and the American guy who was helping them in Canada and Luke. Everyone else has had to make some really tough decisions most of the time because they have to. I don't think any of these are easy to say you're a good person. I don't think Gilead allows that. It sort of puts you in extremes and positions that you would never think of before. So I thought that was so interesting. But, like, yeah, it's, Yeah, I this tracks with him. I don't know. Him giving up Mayday doesn't surprise me at all. What does surprise me is that he betrayed June, because he's had chances in the past and he's never done that. So I don't understand. Like, just say to him, like, hey, I found out all the other commanders want to murder Lawrence. What do you think? What side should we be on that? Like, I was investigating that. Like, he just heard about that from Lawrence and June. So, I don't know. I'm so confused on why he's spiraling. What do you guys think?
Yeah, that's Mark Twello, in case you were wondering.
So. Yes. Wendy is number one, Mark Twello.
Yeah, I think we covered that.
Yeah. Okay. Kylie says, ugh, this episode was fantastic. Like Jason said, the confrontations between various people was so great and much needed. Lawrence and June, June and Serena, Wharton and Nick, and the best of all, Janine and Aunt Lydia. I agree. That was so good. One of my favorite moments of the series. Would I be okay if Serena had a redemption arc? No. Would I be okay if Lydia did? Yes. And here's why. Aunt Lydia is one of the very few who actually believe all this is in God's name. She's so righteous, she can't even see anything but righteousness. She's not self-aware at all. Nothing she does is for her, but for the written word. She drank the Kool-Aid. She basically lives as if in biblical times and believes it's the right way. The first time she stepped into Jezebel's or anywhere near Jezebel's was this season. She was stunned at the hypocrisy. I kind of wondered if she knew about Jezebel's already, because she didn't seem necessarily like, oh my God, this place exists. But I do wonder about that. She thought everyone was as they seemed and that everyone was like her. With every fiber of her being, she thought she was helping to do the Lord's work. She does really sadistic stuff, but they were pretty severe with their punishments in the Bible. She loses her temper when the girls aren't doing the Lord's work. She uses extreme punishments. In her flashback when she had her friend's son taken away, she didn't do it because she likes cruelty or suffering, but in her mind and her heart of hearts, she believed it was the best of the child. Enter self-righteousness. Something about Janine is different, maybe because at one point Janine truly fell in line and basically commended Aunt Lydia. Janine is proof to Lydia that she's doing the work correctly. She didn't have the respect of her peers or the handmaids, but she did have the respect from Janine until the glass shattered and she saw the real picture. Janine, meaning Janine, I think. The confrontation between Lydia and Janine definitely made me cry. Although instead of talking through it with my dog, I started writing this. Lydia is sorry. She's sorry for everything. But Lydia has whiplash right now. The entire world she knew it is a lie. She can't possibly grasp the reality all at once. Bringing the cookies was innocent and proves that she's out of touch still, but also that she's carrying guilt. Janine bringing up that Lydia stole her daughter was something she knew, but not in this perspective. It just peeled her eyes open more. I certainly hope that she finds a way to get Angela and Janine out, but we're not there yet. She's got much more contemplating to do. She's got more, but I just want to say I agree with all of that, and I think it was very well said. Yeah, very much. As for Serena, Serena is a full-blown narcissist. People with narcissistic personality disorder do not see people as people, but rather objects. They're incapable of love, and they use people to serve themselves, from coworkers to their own children. They're incapable of making real connections with people and will turn on someone the minute they don't serve their purpose in their lives. Like Nicole, for instance. She never loved her. She used her to fulfill the need of love. She used her for her image in Gilead, and once she was gone and Serena was pregnant, Nicole was no longer needed. Now, I mean, this is all awesome too. Now she doesn't exist. She used Fred as well, then used his capture as a chess move. The women on the train were used to fulfill her need to be needed. By getting them all in seats and doting on them, they began liking her. But the minute they knew who she was, she turned on them, and she put her baby in harm's way while she did. With June, it's a little different because there's a real trauma bond there. Trauma bonds really know no bounds. Even though June doesn't serve her life anymore, she's still trying to stay connected. She isn't really sorry. She's just trying to be accepted. Yeah, that's true. She wants June to like her. Narcissists can't stand not being liked. She needs the same from Rita. Serena thought because Rita was nice to her, she must like her and must be her friend. She's so dense that she doesn't realize that she was doing that against her will, because the world only revolves around herself. Kind of like MAGA. Rita is a kind person and gives Serena just enough that Serena isn't turning on her. She might be conniving, but she's still susceptible to love bombing. Of course, Wharton is playing right into her narcissism. She's getting everything she wants by marrying him, but the minute that goes away, and it most certainly will, she'll be done with him too. I hope it's too late. The only way for a narcissist to redeem themselves is by first admitting that they're a narcissist, then getting some help for it. That's not happening. And it's really hard to, like, it's so hard to treat narcissists or to overcome it. But I do think that if someone who's a narcissist does what you said, they become aware and they seek help, that they can improve. But I don't see Serena anywhere close to that. And I can tell you have some knowledge about this, and I'm sorry that you do, because that means that you had one in your life, at least one. But anyway, goes on. That's not happening. She's playing victim instead. Ooh, crossover. Serena is like Allie from the Yellow Jackets. Oh, this is a long one. Let's talk about Nick. If I had to guess on how things will go, Nick is pretty quick on his feet. And although he just asked June to go to Paris with him, I think he's going to come up with a safer, more successful plan for Mayday. He showed us his hand in this episode, ready to run away from his life and pick June to do it with. He knows June would not leave without. I mean, now that we know what happened, it's like he just asked June to do that only so she wouldn't find out what he did.
Honestly,
you know what I mean?
Yes.
Because he wasn't even in danger. He knows June would not leave without freeing the women, but maybe he's thinking afterwards. It's very telling that he'd abandon his pregnant wife. I agree. Maybe Aunt Lydia will go talk to Lawrence about Charlotte, and maybe at that time Lawrence will inform her of the commander's plan and that June is there. Maybe this will be the push Lydia needs to switch sides. Random hot take. Naomi is the most awful character on the show, and I think the only way for a happy ending for Charlotte and Janine is if she dies.
Thank you, Kylie. So, Tam from Perth says, hey everyone, this show, June, is going to give me a bloody heart attack with this never-ending risk-taking. She's got, excuse the expression, balls, whether it's walking back into Gilead, roaming the halls of Jezebel's last week, to knocking on Serena's door. She's so lucky that Serena literally has no friends and gives off a feeling of such desperation with words and tones. The tea party catch-up with Rita was just like when she got the handmaids over to hang out with June, and she's pouring tea and talking wedding cakes like they're best friends. I love how the girl's demeanor instantly changes Serena left the room. I was on the fence about Nick and Luke, but I'm pretty sure most would agree that despite the whirlwind dreams of running off to Paris and love-bombing, Nick is on her shit list, and he should be worried about what's coming to him from every direction now. June, Belle, Warden, the Eyes, etc. Zero allies. Last up, my secret favorite evolution of Joseph, softening with baby Charlotte, aka Angela, teaching a 2-year-old how to play chess or go to art class is insane unless you notice the comparison to show how Joseph is playing his hand now, explaining the chess pieces to this little girl with her bonnet band, the picture of innocence. To me, each piece could represent how Gilead works. Everyone is regimented and has a role that doesn't deviate from the king, with one step at a time being chased down to the pawns that can be sacrificed. And Joseph is the knight, taking a straight line and then a quick sidestep. He's been doing this since he watched Emily and Nicole get on the truck out. And now he's moving forward but dodging everyone chasing him down. The writers are so clever to make my brain think this way, and I just hope we get some kind of happy ending, just so we all don't end up in some kind of loony bin. As usual, my word count runs well over, but I just have to talk about this. Tam, thank you. Oh my
Thanks,
gosh. Tam.
Great. I've so really good. Enjoyed everybody's feedback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
those
it's been
people
great.
That really wrote a lot every week. It's really
yeah.
cool.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Maria Nicolau says, hi guys, just started listening this season. Bummed I didn't find you earlier. I want to thank you for helping me rewind and unpack what just happened after each episode. It's been a wild ride, and I'm so scared for the end. The Handmaid's Tale is the most difficult series to watch and one of the most important, and I'm glad there's a global community of viewers. Thanks for sticking along, and I definitely need the company. Under his eyebrows, much love from Greece. Well, Maria, I hope you're going to stick with us because we're going to do testaments.
We are. And I want to mention Maria left her comment on Spotify, which you can do now. You
oh,
can
yeah,
comment on
funny.
Episodes. So,
on a single episode. That's
I was
cool.
over there checking it out. And so, yeah.
Neat.
So we have another call from Red Leader Understudy.
Nick sucks! Also in this episode, we find out Commander Lawrence played college basketball in Cookie diplomacy apparently works better in the mushroom zombie apocalypse than it does in the fertility apocalypse, but it also helps when you're already friends and aren't complicit in stealing someone's baby. Maybe someone should tell Lydia that. But also, good luck with that, because Gilead people have the emotional literacy of toddlers at best. And I'm saying best because even most three-year-olds know that even if you apologize to someone, they might still want you to go away and leave them alone, Lydia. Then you have Serena, who still thinks she can earn forgiveness from June transactionally. And thinks it would be fun to have Arita bake her wedding cake. How precious! And says something reminiscing like, I miss when you used to bake bread and muffins. The unsaid part being back when you were forced to be my household servant. Like, what? For someone who's supposed to be smart, Serena's a real fucking dumbass sometimes. She spent so much of her life around people who have to yes and her that she has no idea she has like toilet level social awareness. Mm-hmm. Like toilet. June points out that Wharton, who is terrifying, by the way, is giving early Fred, and also that New Bethlehem is just rearranging the deck chairs, but Serena would rather shut out reality and cling to the protective blankie of her righteous beliefs again. Mm-hmm. We know people do this instinctually. We've kind of seen her go either way. The question is whether she will keep doing this or try to make more choices away from it, even though she's probably going to keep going back and forth. I could still see her going either way. The question is, will she do more and more of the second one, even when that forces her to reckon with herself? Which we'll see. The closet scene at the end was dope. Everyone else said it already. I'm with you guys in thinking Nick probably isn't directly about to like out June, but this still is a deep cut. And yeah, maybe a breakup. If and when they get out of the closet, I don't know where they go from here. Maybe Nick bakes some cookies and Serena has a tea party and everyone hugs. Oh.
And we'll have a bounce house there for the children to jump around in.
And Lawrence. I think Nick's going to do some heroic act and sacrifice himself.
That was great. Please send in more for the next few episodes. That was really great.
Please.
Well, that's Madeline. She's going to be on an episode, I think, number 9.
Oh, okay.
She'll be joining us. Yeah.
Yes. I look forward to that because I'm on that one. Great. So that'll be you, Jason, me, and Madeline.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And you can call in Wendy.
We'll miss you, Wendy.
Sure, from France.
So you're the one that's going to Paris.
Yes.
Not with Nick.
Probably not.
Okay. We are now at the time where we do our May Day briefing. And so I'm going to turn it over to Jason.
All right. So this is our segment where we talk about real world stuff and how things that are kind of like The Handmaid's Tale are happening in the real world. And one of the clear, so if you don't want to hear that, you should just stop listening. Spoilers. One of the clearest ways that The Handmaid's Tale reflects what's happening in the US today is through the growing influence of Christian ideology in government. And the problem is absolutely not Christianity or religion itself, but we should all be free to practice whatever religion we want or none at all. That's supposed to be one of the foundational principles of American democracy. And the problem comes when a religion gets tangled up with government and when the laws of our diverse country start reflecting the values of just one religious group. Then freedom of religion begins to erode and we get closer to something like Gilead. And, you know, as we all saw in The Handmaid's Tale, religion was used to justify extreme authoritarian policies. They were trying to fix two big problems, radiation poisoning and a declining birth rate. But they leaned on scripture to create this system where, quote, fallen women could be forced into servitude as handmaids, drawing from the story of Jacob's handmaid in the Bible. And then anyone the government deemed, quote, unworthy, like non-believers, rebels, or, quote, gender traitors, was shipped off to toxic wastelands to clean up the mess and probably die there. And you know, we've seen that many of Gilead's leaders didn't even really believe in the religious ideals that were supposed to be the basis of all this. Otherwise, why create Jezebels if virtue and piety were what it was all about? It's obvious that religion wasn't guiding at least some of them, that it was just a tool for power and control. So what does that have to do with us? Well, in the real world, Donald Trump has used religion in the same way. It's pretty damn clear that he doesn't know anything about the Bible. If you remember, he once called 2 Corinthians 2 Corinthians. And when he was asked about his favorite scripture, he was like, that's too personal for me to say. Oh, just give me one line. No, it's too personal. It's because he doesn't know anything about it, clearly.
No, he's not a Christian.
No. I mean, he's cheated on all his wives. You know, he's just, slept with a porn star.
He has, name me one Christian value he has shown.
He's anti-Christian. But he's built a strong alliance with Christians, and that's been key to his political success. He's signed executive orders expanding protections for religious groups. He supported businesses refusing service to LGBTQ plus people on religious grounds. He's rolled back protections for trans people and just opposed LGBTQ plus rights. And beyond policy, he's leaned heavily into Christian nationalist rhetoric. He called himself a defender of Judeo-Christian values, claiming Christians are under attack by secular elites, staging photo ops like holding a Bible outside a church during the George Floyd protest, upside down, I believe. He's pushed for more prayer in public schools, and he's portrayed public education as hostile to people of faith. So he's appealing to evangelical homeschoolers and private Christian school advocates. He also brought Christian nationalist figures into key roles in his administration. Paula White Cain is a televangelist, and Trump's longtime spiritual advisor was appointed senior advisor to the White House Faith Office and works alongside Attorney General Pam Bondi, who recently launched a campaign to crack down on supposed anti-Christian bias in federal institution, which is a move that risks prioritizing Christian ideology in government functions. Scott Turner, Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, issued guidance refining gender under HUD rules strictly by a biblical male-female binary, describing it as getting government out of the way of what the Lord established. That's a quote from Scott Turner. Worst of all, Russell Vought, who's was former and now back as current director of the Office of Management and Budget, he is the guy, he was the main architect of Project 2025, which if you listen to our podcast about Let's Not Have The Handmaid's Tale for Real, we talked all about that. It's a sweeping blueprint to reshape the federal government around conservative Christian values, claiming freedom is, quote, defined by God, not man. Russell Vought has been described as the glue between Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, and the Republican agenda, coordinating efforts to dismantle federal agencies and replace civil servants with political loyalists. His influence extends to major policy shifts, including mass federal layoffs and the rollback of civil service protections, all under the guise of efficiency, but driven by a Christian nationalist vision. Vought's 180-day playbook outlines a rapid transformation of the federal government, aiming to consolidate executive power and align federal policies with conservative Christian principles. And his role isn't symbolic, it's strategic. This 180-day playbook is designed to fast track these changes in the first 6 months of the administration. It outlines how to dismantle federal agencies, purge career civil servants, and install loyalists who will push this Christian nationalist agenda. These aren't isolated moves. They're part of this larger coordinated effort to reshape the U.S. government in the image of this particular religious worldview, like a soft theocracy. Just yesterday on May 1st, which was the National Day of Prayer, Trump signed Trump signed an executive order establishing a presidential commission on religious liberty. And during the Rose Garden ceremony, he openly questioned the separation of church and state, saying, "They say separation between church and state. I said, all right, let's forget about that for one time." This move, chaired by Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, signals a a big change to the longstanding principle of separating religion from government. It's not good for anybody to have, like, if you think of the theocracies around the world, they're not good.
No.
We need it separate, right? And he's just got all these other people around him, Ben Carson, Cardinal Timothy Dolan, Dr. Phil. It's a combination of political, religious, and media influences meant to reinforce the message that religion isn't just welcome in government, it should guide it. And all this points to just this move to embed conservative Christian doctrine into the machinery of government. And that has real consequences, especially to LGBTQ plus people, non-Christians, non-religious Americans, but it also reaches into education, healthcare, basic civil services. Dismantling the Department of Education, for example, means fewer safeguards for secular and inclusive curricula. So what people study, rewriting healthcare guidelines through a biblical lens could limit access to reproductive care or gender affirming treatment. Even disaster relief and public health policy could be affected by faith-based priorities. And it all deepens division when leaders push the idea that one group's religious belief should define in the entire country. It fuels this polarization, you know, this thing that I was talking about in this episode where people come to see others as other, unworthy, somebody who doesn't count or matter. And it just turns it all into this, like, makes people feel like there's existential threats on the other side. It's a dangerous path for any democracy. And in the end, I think it damages religion too, because when faith gets weaponized for political power, then it's not about spirituality anymore, or personal belief. It's about control. It's about, it undermines the moral authority that religion has. Like, when faith becomes a tribe and everyone else outside that tribe is seen as an enemy, something's gone wrong. When government uses religion as a tool of control, then freedom suffers for everybody. And that's exactly what happened in Gilead. And it's where the U.S. is heading right now, more and more every day.
Yeah. I mean, our country's going back 100 years. It's insane that people are doing this.
Yeah. It's bad. And I hope, like, I know there are some Christians listening to me, and I know at least one that I'm thinking of right now, I think agrees with me that freedom of religion is where we should be, not where the government dictates what everyone needs to believe.
The freedom of religion is the reason people left England in the first place.
If you believe in Jesus and you think Jesus would be happy with these changes that are being made, I grew up on Christianity.
Me too.
Those two things just don't go together.
They do not. The way that people are acting, it's not the way that I was taught in Sunday school or in church to behave and to treat other people. And that floors me, that people think that this is okay. I don't know what church they went to that taught them this. It doesn't make sense.
And with, like, Pam Bondi, have you guys seen her speak?
Yes.
Yeah.
And she's got this fire, and she's always wearing a cross. And you can tell, I think, that she's got, like, Lydia and Serena levels of belief around everything she's doing and self-righteousness, you know?
Yep.
And that should be separate. Like, be that way in your church and with your family, but not with other people that you have control over.
Yeah.
And then there's the people like Trump and plenty of others like him that, you know, they don't have a Christian bone in their bodies.
No.
But they're just using it.
Yeah. Trump would be going to Jezebel's.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He's been to Jezebel's.
Yeah, that's right. You saw Matt Gaetz there.
Yeah.
So, Wendy, what can we do about it?
All right. Well, I say this with the understanding that it's hard times for people. And so I think everybody has to participate in the level that they're comfortable with. But I think raise awareness. Don't be afraid to speak up on social media. We need people to talk about this. Talk to others. Share information with friends, family. We need to socialize this. And the thing is, like, 20 years ago, we would say, like, oh, let's not talk about politics. But this isn't politics. This is way of life, human rights, the dismantling of our country. This we need to talk about. Write op-eds, letters to the editor. Local papers still matter. Your neighborhood, your voice can influence your community. Engage politically, obviously, vote. Local and state races matter as much as federal ones. Vote for everything. Call in or write your representatives. I know I've been using the Five Calls app. It's great. It makes it easy. It lays everything out for you. But I also think when you call, try to be as off the cuff as possible. I just rant. And usually I pick on Andy Harris because I live in a predominantly Democrat state and he's one of the Republicans. And he frequently emails me because I write in and give my email and my phone number and my address, which God forbid, but that's how we have to do it. And he will frequently respond with emails, and the emails are form letters that say the same thing every time. They say, this country elected Donald Trump and he has a mandate to change America and that's what's happening and I support it. And that's all he says about every topic.
Our cult leader, whatever he says goes, and yeah. He's the law of the land now. He's our dictator and we bow down to him.
Yeah. And they're afraid. They won't buck it. Contribute time or money to nonprofits and advocacy groups. Wikipedia is under fire. I just donated to them. I mean, they don't want facts. They don't want education. They don't want it easily readable.
Nope.
They would love to just do away with Wikipedia.
Right. And here's a little hope for people who haven't been paying attention to the news, because maybe you all have, but Trump's 100 days just passed, and so they came out with a bunch of polls, and it turns out that since they've done polling of presidential approval ratings, this is the worst that any president has ever had at this point in his term, including Trump in his previous term. That's been like 80 years or something like that. So that's, to me, I mean, it's bad right now. It is. But I try to, like, it's good to point out the good news. And to me, that is good news, because a lot of dictatorships happen with overwhelming support. And we're not seeing that in this country. And I hope that American spirit of freedom and fighting spirit is starting to come back, you know.
On my way home today, and I live in a very suburb area. And on my way home, pretty close to home, probably 5 miles from home, very much suburbs, I passed by about 50 senior citizens on the street corners protesting. And this is not something you see every day. You know, that's, you know, on a Friday night during rush hour.
Yeah.
And this weekend I participated in a huge protest in Baltimore that was really uplifting and made me feel better about the situation.
And what did your sign say?
Oh, my sign said, "Make Gilead fiction again," which a lot of people liked that. And it was really great to see so many people in one place, because so often you feel so alone in all this.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Yeah. And with that is, like, take everyday action, be a watchdog, report discrimination, educate yourself, educate on laws and current events, knowledge is power, check on your neighbors, check on your friends, see how people are doing. We have to take care of ourselves. Yeah. We have to be a community.
And that's as important, like hearing us, if it makes you feel better, that's great. Going to a protest can actually help you feel better. Talking to people who feel the same as you, venting, all of that, because we need to keep our spirits up, keep our fighting spirits up.
Yeah.
And you know what? That sounds a lot more like what I learned when I went to church. being a community, being a right. community, supporting That's, each other, being there for each other.
That's what it's supposed to be.
In the spirit of community, I want to talk and share. We have a Facebook group, The Handmaid's Tale May Day. And if you're feeling like you need a place to talk it out with other people that are watching The Handmaid's Tale and talking about those similarities, we've made a safe space for you to be able to come and vent if you need to and give each other support. We'll have a link in our show notes. The community has grown a lot, especially over the last week, and we're really starting to have some good discussions in there.
That's awesome. Great.
Right, that's our show. Thanks for listening, everyone. Next up, Handmaid's Tale Season 6, Episode 8, Exodus.
I wonder what that is.
Yeah, I'm
Everybody
not sure.
Everybody leaves New Bethlehem? Maybe?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Everyone leaves Gilead. Where are they going
to
go?
Yeah. If you want to write in or send us a voice message about what we're talking about, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
While you're there, be sure to check out our other shows right now, Andor. I mean, there's so many shows right now that are a reflection of our discontent with oppressive government. Andor's one of those. You could watch that and love it, even if you've never seen a Star Wars thing in your life. In fact, you might not have any like baggage or expectations and love it even more. It's so good. It's so smart. Other shows that we cover that are kind of in the same vein are Squid Game. And gosh, it seems like there was a couple other ones that were like about authoritarian things. Silo is kind of like that. I feel like I'm missing a big one. But anyway, if you go to podcastica.com and just click podcast, you can see all the shows that we cover.
Yeah, I want to mention that Strange Indeed is actually back after a long break.
Yes.
And covering the final season of You. So they're back, Paik and Rima. They've covered the first two episodes so far, so they're going week to week with it.
Mm-hmm. It's great.
All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
And remember, never let anyone's smoldering gaze obscure your better judgment.
Except Pedro Pascal.
Okay, he's an exception. Yeah.
Matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.